What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Home Stand Show. No James Sharman, no Albert Vartanian. It is I, Justin Pooney, hosting the show today. Just kidding. Guess who's back from Montreal?
I'm back.
Albert Vartanian is back live in the flesh. Noor Zainab is joining us today. We have a big basketball show lined up for you today. A bunch of guests, a bunch of hoop talks. Great show lined up. Albert, first thing I want to ask you is... How was Montreal?
Montreal was great. I love this, by the way. A little special edition. Yeah. Hoop Talks taking over Homestand.
NBA
talking
special,
ball.
You guys. Ball's life. But Toronto's ball. Yeah. Toronto's ball basketball. You got to talk about basketball.
There's so much going on. Like, when it comes to leagues and storylines, I don't know if anything trumps the NBA right now. Not the NHL. Nope. I mean, the MLB is interesting, but just started. NFL is always interesting, but the NBA, I think, leads the leagues
heating up
in
right
terms
now.
Of storylines.
The offseason, it's like you can't keep your eyes off of Twitter, the Woj, the Shams. They keep going. It's crazy.
And now it's starting to get great, especially in the West. Like last night, you had LeBron James against the Clippers. The Clippers win.
We're going to dive into that.
We'll get into
My guy, LeBron, did not have his best game last night, which is kind of...
No, he's too busy passing to Westbrook on the bench. Right?
Yeah,
what's going on?
Yeah, I had no idea what's going on. But the Toronto Raptors were in action last night against the shorthanded Boston Celtics. They fell 97-93. Noor, rough shooting night for your boys in the red and white. Actually, these are both your teams, the Celtics and the Raptors.
Yeah, how many teams you got, Noor?
It was really bad. I saw Blake Griffin for a second. I'm like, wait, who am I cheering for right now? But, you know, listen, it was tough because, as you said, we were missing Jason Tatum. They were missing Robert Williams. They were missing Al Horford. They were missing Marcus Smart, my other favorite player on that team. So, you know, they were down big guys that they rely on to get the shooting in. The Raptors, on the other hand, they were healthy. They brought back Gary Trent Jr. And there were moments that I was like, okay, we can maybe go blow for blow, punch for punch, but the team like this, I know, granted, they are without their main guys. Don't worry about it, Justin. But I saw some things that I was confident about, but the problem again was not being able to close out the game, not making your shots that were supposed to go in. There were so many good looks. The Raptors were just not connecting, and that's what worries me going into this play-in, thinking, do they have the offense to, you know, just kind of match up to the other offense of the other teams? That's what I'm worried about.
Man, Fred VanVleet's stat line was not pretty at all.
It was ugly.
2 for 14 from the field, 1 for 12 from 3-point range. Gary Trent Jr. came back, shot 0 for 5.
Yeah.
Albert, this team, you talked about their shooting, their mishaps all season long. Is that going to be their Achilles heel come next week in the play-in?
Yeah, and just a lack of consistency. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, you can't go 41% from the field and go 6 for 30. From deep. And I respect Fred VanVleet. He said, he goes, that one's on me. Mm-hmm. He goes, I don't know if we can survive if I'm 1 for 12 from three. And I completely understand that. Mm-hmm. But it's so concerning when you mentioned, you know, no Marcus Smart, no Tatum, no Al Horford. And you have a fully healthy Raptors team in a regular season game where it's must win for the Raptors, not for the Celtics. And they can't capitalize on that. That tells me, even if they were to make it into the playoffs and play, let's say, the Bucks or let's say this, or whoever they're going to play, they have absolutely no chance.
Mm-hmm.
Zero chance based on that performance, because it's just too inconsistent. You get guys who can perform on certain nights, and Pascal was one of those guys, but then you get an off night from an important piece like Fred VanVleet.
Yeah.
And then you can't handle a guy like Malcolm Brogdon coming off the bench, dropping 29 points. And then your bench doesn't score either. What, 18 points off of the bench, and 16 of those were Precious Achiuah?
Yeah.
I mean, it's frustrating. And I talked about the Raptors for so long this season, saying if they get into the play-in, they have a chance.
Yeah.
But that performance yesterday completely changed my mind. And I think they get into the play-in and they get bounced quickly.
You know, I'm also worried, though, because as we saw in that game as well against the Celtics last night, I think Fred VanVleet hurt his hand. He was going into something on the other end, getting the ball, getting the steal, and he just kind of moved it in the wrong way where it got stuck against the other Celtics jersey for a second, and you could tell he went back, got his arm taped, and he wasn't really favoring his left hand. Now, given he does shoot with his right hand, so we don't have to worry about too much, but still, it's the injury factor there. So now I'm thinking, if you're down a guy who you rely on so much in Fred VanVleet, not just in scoring, but passing, but defense, and stopping the other team's best guard, how do you give yourself a chance in the play-in or the playoff without a guy like
that?
Yeah,
seeding, I think, is so important with the play-in, because the Raptors are horrible away from home.
Yes.
And if they don't get home court advantage, there's so many things going against this team. That throwing the Nick Nurse stuff now, which I thought was completely unnecessary. This Raptors team is in serious trouble.
I think, like, the way it shapes are now, they're probably going to play Chicago in the first game at home. But I'm scared of Chicago if I'm the Raptors. Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, Nikola Vucevic. Yeah. Like, these guys can put buckets up on you, right? And the Raptors have struggled with defense. And the other thing is this, the fourth quarter. Again, yes, the Celtics only had 18 points in the fourth quarter. The Raptors had 21, right? The fourth quarter, to me, is the Raptors' Achilles heel. They don't know how to run offense. They don't know how to play the game of basketball on the offensive side. Sometimes, most of the time on the defensive side, too. That, to me, and going up against a team like Chicago, who has a guy like DeMar DeRozan who's made big shots, Zach LaVine who's made big shots, I'm worried. Like, they could, if they don't play well in the fourth quarter of that first play-in game, they might just be a one-and-done team.
Yeah, and that's the difference between the Raptors and I think a lot of successful teams is the fourth quarter mm-hmm. when teams are making shots. I mean, yesterday it was so poor. It was just rushing and just making bad decisions. And I guess you can chalk it up to Fred's injury. But some of those misses, I mean, not even hitting the rim, missing the rim completely. Scottie Barnes not hitting the net. OG not making clear cut open threes. So the fourth quarter is a problem, but there's tons of problems throughout this entire roster.
I just want to see offense drawn up. I want to see a play drawn up. I want to see a player take the court, hold up a hand. Now the players know a play has been drawn up. You practice this in practice. A coach made sure that you can execute this. So go and do it. Why are we holding the ball in the perimeter and waiting for it to come find us? This is not a shooting team that can take you far in the playoffs, and I'm scared for the Toronto Raptors.
Well,
I'm scared.
Not good.
Well, the Raptors do have a shot at redemption against the Boston Celtics on Friday night, and they close out against the Milwaukee Bucks on Sunday afternoon. I will be in attendance. Ooh. I will be cheering for Giannis heavily. He's going to play.
But don't worry about us. We do
but
have.
Coming up after this break, we're going to be sitting down with Savannah Hamilton of Sportsnet, the Raptors courtside reporter. You won't want to miss it.
Savannah, how are you?
I'm so good. Thanks for the warm introduction, Noor. You're actually a rock star, so I'm just happy to be here with you and Justin.
Anytime. Are you on the road currently or are you at home?
Well, as you can see by the beautiful hotel art, I definitely am on the road. I can't say I would furnish my place like this, but it's still lovely. Yeah.
I will say I really got the cozy vibes a little bit.
Do you guys get the free continental breakfast too at hotels as well?
I mean, I haven't had any free breakfasts, unfortunately. Oh. I feel like I sleep in too long. Oh. But yeah, I think they might be available, but I just don't know.
I always want to ask
that
question.
Games go till midnight. You don't got time for breakfast
in
the morning.
That's true, too. That's true, yeah.
That's fine. Well, Savannah, we know you have a very close grasp on the Raptors. You see them up close and personal. So the first thing I want to ask you is, we're about to hit the play-in realm. How confident and what are your expectations for this team heading into this stretch now?
Yeah, I think with this team, like, they know their capabilities in terms of just how far they can go and what when they're playing on all cylinders, when they're clicking on all cylinders, like, they know what they're capable of 100%. And so for them, it's a matter of putting the pieces together. And like what Fred VanVleet even said last night in the loss against the Boston Celtics, you know, it was a matter of just like missing shots. It's not like they didn't have good looks. It's just they had to knock them down. And, you know, Fred like put that weight on himself personally a lot. So I think right now the team is actually trending in a really great area. They're really peaking at the right time. But shooting has always been a concern all season. And so that's something that they honestly, like, that could be their Achilles heel going into the play-in tournament. But at the same time, if they have a great shooting night in this play-in, then like it's almost hard to stop the Raptors because they are still one of the best defensive teams in the league, and they steadily climbed up all season in that category as well. So you know, and with the addition of Jakob Poeltl, like, they just have a combination that's really, really hard to stop going through him. And so I think I'm feeling pretty confident about the play-in tournament, as long as, you know, they find their rhythm early in the game, and it's just about hitting shots.
Now, you mentioned hitting shots. The Raptors did struggle from the three-point range, 18%. But I want to talk about Gary Trent Jr. We saw him back in the lineup. He played 16 minutes. Again, you saw the rust was there. How important do you think Gary Trent is to the Raptors having success in the play-in and then potentially in the playoffs?
Oh, he's crucial. Like, you think about him now coming off of the Raptors bench, especially, he gives such a extra added boost. And yeah, you're completely right. I think it was rust last night. I'm not too concerned about, you know, him getting his rhythm back. Like, he'll find it, I'm sure, sooner than later. He's the type of guy that puts in extra shots when his shot wasn't falling during the game. He'll stay after a game and continue to find his rhythm. So But when it comes to just what he brings, like, you know, he's such an offensive power for them. And like without Gary, they've struggled from the field. Like, this is not the first bad shooting night that we've seen, right? They struggled against Miami. They struggled against the 76ers, especially in the first half. And like, with Gary, at least when he's coming off the bench, you know exactly that you're going to get a sharpshooter, or at least somebody that the other team has to guard from distance, which then also opens up the court, because now you have to get rim runners and you can get other guys coming off and making sparks off the bench as well, or just embedding him into the starting lineup. How many times have we seen that too, where, like, you know, instead of maybe Yak out there, we have Gary out there, and other guys are shifting their positions. But he definitely is an option. He's a great threat on the court to have. And yeah, I think he's going to bring a huge boost coming off the bench for them.
I think the best part about having a team that you can pretty much rely on any guy to go off any given night, whether that be, as you mentioned, Gary Trent Jr., you've got Fred VanVleet, mm-hmm. who had an historic night the other night, is obviously Pascal Siakam, who's leading the team in points. Going into this play-in run, we kind of have to now rely on one person to take the reins and take the burden of the team to make sure that the vibes are there, but more importantly, the offense and the defense is there too. So who are you thinking in terms of importance on the Raptors team right now should be given that position going into this play-in run?
Oh man, like literally, like when I say it has to be all in, like I was really thinking about like this question when you sent me it earlier. I was kind of thinking like, okay, like who is going to be that guy for them? And like, just thinking of, like, if I was to ask any one of them, they would say the same thing. It has to be literally everybody locked in, because it's almost like the moment that one person isn't locked in, then like the team loses focus in certain areas and ends. And I know it's a very like maybe generic cliche answer that like everybody has to be all in together, but it's so true. Like, you can't have one guy that's like, you know, like not contributing energy, that's not playing their role, that's like thinking outside of themselves, or have, you know, other like things going on in their head while the game's going on right now. Like, you know, you think about Pascal Siakam when he's playing his best basketball, like the way that we saw him playing against the Knicks in the Garden. You know, he was just so focused, he was so locked in. He doesn't play like that, you know, like like a 50 point night every night, but he plays really like relatively consistently when he's having great games. You know exactly what you're gonna get. And then of course with Fred, like he's been playing better basketball in my opinion, like as of more so recently, because he's been facilitating. Like, he had that franchise record of assists, and I think that's just like a really great role and skill set that like Fred has been utilizing as of more like recently, instead of like taking just solely all the scoring load. Like, he's distributing it a little bit more, and like that's what's finding success for them. So like, I think like maybe those two are the engine of the machine that they have going on. But then you know, you think about X factors like Precious last night too, right? Comes off the bench, has a 16 point night after, you know, having a bit of a rougher stretch of games as of recently, but he got his time. He made the most out of his minutes. And honestly, he kept them in the game for a lot of that coming off the bench. And then for the most part, Chris Boucher is actually very consistent coming off the bench as well. And so like, you know, if he's not bringing energy, then that could, you know, that'd be a hit to the team. Like, if they're not playing well, if they didn't get that strong start right away. So when I say it's like, it's such a collective effort with this team, which is, you know, it's not like one guy's carrying the load, but which could be a bit scary because, you know, let's call it for what it is. Like, we don't have like a huge, huge name on the team the way that like other teams do. And I'm talking about like the Luka Doncic's, the Giannis Antetokounmpo's and stuff like that, that would normally be the one to like, this is the guy that you have to rely on. Instead, the Raptors have spread it out in a way that like everybody like seriously brings a huge piece to the pie. And if they're not clicking, then almost like the whole thing doesn't quite work.
I want to talk about a guy who gets kind of slight. We talked about, of course, Siakam, all the big names, Gary Trent. I want to talk about Jeff Dowden Jr., a guy who has gained a lot of trust from Nick Nurse a lot. He's played up to 29 minutes, and we know how stingy Nick Nurse is with his minutes. Savannah, from what you've seen of Jeff Dowden Jr., what do you make of his game? And just, I love his tenacity, but what are some of the biggest things you take from his game?
Yo, Jeff Dowden Jr., he's such a fan favorite, eh?
He is.
Yeah, yo, everybody loves him. And like, I mean, rightfully so. He brings so much energy. He brings a spark off the bench. And I think the reason why he's appealed to so many fans so early, especially, is because he does not do the most. Like, he's not out here looking for his own shots and like trying to play towards his contract in the sense of like, oh, I have to prove myself. Like, no, he's playing with authenticity of, I just want to help my team win. like that's kind of what he brings. And it's a hard decision, of course, that the Raptors are in right now. We'll find out soon what his status will be for, I mean, the remainder of this season at least. But yeah, like, I mean, I think he's also a huge piece that has a lot of value. And on top of that, like, he has such a high ceiling to build off of as well.
Yeah, the Raptors do meet tonight with Masai Ujiri, Bobby Webster, and Nick Nurse. Talk about Jeff Down Jr. and his future with the Toronto Raptors. But real quick, before we let you go, Savannah, what are the odds of Masai running it back again next year with the same core?
Ooh, so my theory that I had, and this is strictly Savannah's thoughts, not a reflection of anything. My theory that I had in my head is that because they didn't make any huge, huge moves in trade deadline, obviously now looking back, it's a huge move that we got Jakob because of the way that things have been flowing. But they, you know, like with all the trade rumors circulating around OG and Fred and like a lot of the guys, I felt like the entire trade deadline was about the Raptors. But nothing really came out of it. I feel like that was almost a double down. And I do think that there probably has to be a move made in offseason. I think we'd be a little bit like naive to think that like they could keep everybody and like these contracts and like they're bigger and stuff like that. Like you don't want to get too close to the luxury tax or you don't want to go past it or whatever, unless like that's a distinct choice that they want to make. But
yeah.
But otherwise, like
I have three players pretty much coming up for contract this off season. And we know nobody else is going to be covering this. Like Savannah Hamilton will be covering it. We've put her socials on everywhere on the screen. Go follow her, check her out everywhere. If you can't follow her on socials, turn on your TV and you'll find her right there. Savannah, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for taking the time. Up next, stick around for Mo Dakhil to talk everything NBA, and we'll see you guys soon. Welcome back to the Homestand Show. Joining us now is Mo Dakhil of Los Angeles, California. He's a writer, a podcaster, all over Bleacher Report and The Athletic NBA. Thank you so much, Mo, for waking up at 8 o'clock in the morning, your time, and taking the time to talk to us lowly Northern folks over here. Thank you.
Sometimes you got to let the East Side and the North know who you are, and that requires sacrifices like waking up early and setting an alarm.
Absolutely.
You know how jealous I am of the West Coast time zone? You guys get to watch these games. Yeah. I'm like hanging out in dear life at 1 o'clock in the morning to watch the LA showdown.
I don't know about that.
Okay, see, Justin, maybe you might be different.
I'm from the West Coast. So I'm from Vancouver. So I think that the East Coast kind of has it. You have to give and take a little bit, right? Yes, you got to stay late for the West Coast games. But NFL time, 1 o'clock, that's nothing beats that.
Justin, you couldn't be more wrong. First off, let me just explain to you something. West Coast time, NFL, 10 a.m.
Yeah, but perfect. If you go late on the Saturday night, you want to need a couple hours to recuperate.
But even then, you wake up, you're slowly groggy, you're kind of just rolling in. It's a slow morning. You turn on the NFL games, you're good to go. West Coast time zone is the best time zone for American sports, period.
You have the best everything over there. You got the best time zone, the best weather, the best landscape. And they also have Mo. Mo knows everything NBA. He follows everything closely. So who better to pick the brain of this fine Thursday morning? Sorry, I forgot the day of the week for a second. This fine Thursday morning than Mo Dakhil. So Mo, I got to ask you first and foremost, we know how closely you pay attention to the NBA. So what's the team out there in this parity year that's disappointed you and you thought would be doing better than they are right now?
I think the most obvious question or answer to that question is the Dallas Mavericks. You see what they're doing. They have Luka, who was basically an MVP candidate to start the season and has full on fallen apart at this point with the trade deadline, bringing in Kyrie. But even before then, their defense was terrible. They really were struggling across the board. And then since they brought Kyrie in and they gave up Dorian Finney-Smith, one of their best defenders, everything has fallen apart for this team. And now we're looking at the possibility that they're not even going to make the play-in tournament. Forget the playoffs, just making the play-in tournament. And it doesn't even seem likely. So it's hands down, they're the most disappointing team.
Now, Mark Cuban came out and made some very interesting comments about Jalen Brunson and the whole contract situation, how his father got involved and all of that. It's very noisy in Dallas right now. And I feel like they're now put in a position where they're going to have to re-sign Kyrie to salvage this situation. Is there a chance Luka Doncic could just get fed up and request a trade out of Dallas?
I mean, Justin, it's the NBA. It's going to happen at some point. Somebody's going to do it, you know, in terms of a star. There's one almost every year. Possibly could be Luka. I don't think it's going to be Luka this season. I think he's going to wait to see how the offseason goes. But the Mavs have to make some smart moves. And to Mark Cuban's, you know, argument about the whole Jalen Brunson side of it, yeah, but you went and signed JaVale McGee 3 years. Like, you really don't have a leg to stand on when it comes to deals that you've made and whatnot. I feel like they've made some massive mistakes even long before Brunson, and bringing in Christian Wood, JaVale McGee, like pieces that don't really help them defensively, even though the idea of bringing McGee Wood but signing him for 3 years was just a massive mistake. I feel like they've really put themselves in a very difficult position. So it shouldn't shock anybody if Luka does come out in the offseason and demands a trade.
If you were to dole out the blame, like the blame pie of the Dallas Mavericks, who do you think shoulders the most blame? Is it Mark Cuban in the front office? Is it Jason Kidd? Is it Luka? Is it Kyrie? Who gets the most blame for a team that destroyed the Phoenix Suns, a historically good regular season team, to go to the Western Conference Finals, and now they're fighting for their play-in lives?
I think to start out, and this will surprise everybody, I think Kyrie gets zero blame. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of these problems were there before he got there. I think Mark Cuban and the front office really do hold the brunt of this and a large amount of it. I don't think Jason Kidd is a particularly good coach. I think he's a bit of a liability for them. And then I think Luka Doncic has to own the fact that he's just terrible defensively, doesn't give a lot of effort, complains a lot to the referees, and allows the other teams to get into transition. A lot of those types of things. I think that those three parties are all involved in terms of they share the blame. And Kyrie, to his, you know, just to be fair, this has nothing to do with him. These problems were bad before he got there, and they brought him in and they made a big swing to get him. And I don't think there's much that he could improve in that situation.
I was scared when I asked you the question, you might say the Toronto Raptors. That disappointed you the most this season. Because there's a couple teams out there, you know. You could go with the Minnesota route, the Toronto route, the Dallas route. But for sure, Dallas, I think, based off where they were last year to now, has just been a slap in the face for that fan base. But let's stick to the actual funny, the best part of it, the good part of it. What's a team that's impressed you instead?
Yeah, I think we got to go with the Sacramento Kings.
Like
I think they're this is easy questions, guys. This is the most obvious one, right? Who had them finishing third in the Western Conference, winning the Pacific Division at the start of the season? I certainly did not. And I think you just look at the way they've played. Their offense has been unbelievable. I mean, just the way they play offensively is absolutely amazing. I think DeMontis Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox are going to be all NBA guys. When was the last time we talked about one King as a potential all NBA guy? And I'm saying these two guys should be locks for all NBA. That's just a wild change. Mike Brown, coach of the year. Mark Brown does not need to be coach of the year. I don't know who that is. but Mike Brown, coach of the year, I think is pretty obvious. And that breaking the playoff drought, there's no other team than them, I think, being the most, you know, surprising in that. We have contenders. Oklahoma City is definitely one of them. I think there's, you know, the Cleveland Cavaliers really kind of, I think, surpassed some expectations by finishing fourth in the Eastern Conference. But at the end, it's the Kings.
Now, heading into the playoffs, I think a lot of the dialogue amongst, you know, the Western Conference is that everybody kind of wants that sixth spot to take on the Kings. Are rival NBA teams taking this team for granted because they have the best offense in basketball?
Yeah, I don't think they are, because even though they have the best offense in basketball, they do have a terrible defense.
They do.
That's an important aspect there in that end. And I think, you know, it's as explosive as their offense is, they give up a ton defensively in those situations. And in the playoffs, it's going to come down to defense. We know the old adage, defense wins championships. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what teams are banking on, is that if we have an entire week to prepare for them, whoever gets the sixth seed is going to have 4 or 5 days before the first playoff game. They're going to be able to sit down and start to kind of put together a defensive scheme to take advantage of the Kings and try to put them in bad positions. We'll see how they react to it. A lot of these guys for Sacramento have never been in the playoffs. So I think this is going to be an interesting sort of, like almost like an awakening for them of like, oh, this is what playoff basketball is like. It's completely different than the regular season. And I think the Kings will find out. So, you know, I'm not surprised teams are targeting them, because that's when your options are Denver, Memphis, Sacramento, or Phoenix, and Phoenix with Kevin Durant, you're going to go like, yeah, no, I'm going to take Sacramento.
So I'm taking it you're not taking the Sacramento Kings out the Western Conference this year, eh?
No.
They're not making it out. No. So let's fast forward a little bit. We're about to see the NBA playoffs take place, and obviously the NBA finals will be happening in June of this year. Who is your early pick to make it out of both conferences?
Well, I think the Milwaukee Bucks are my favorites in the East. It's between them and Boston, but I think Milwaukee will get the edge. Just I think they have a lot more hunger behind it than I think the Celtics. I think the Celtics have still some issues to figure out offensively and rotation-wise and things like that. I think Milwaukee knows exactly who they are. Everybody knows their role. They're perfectly set. The West is like, just, you know, close your eyes and throw, you know, a dart at the board and whoever it lands on. This can go so many different ways. If I had to pick right now, and it probably will drive some people nuts, I'm probably going the Phoenix Suns. And, you know, I know all of the problems that they have, but I don't think people realize that Kevin Durant hasn't lost a game in what feels like 3 or 4 months in a game that he's played. It's been wild. I think he's 23-2 in his last 25 games, including Brooklyn and Phoenix. I mean, at a certain point, we have to kind of start realizing, like, hey, man, he's kind of good at basketball. And I think that's just my pick. But honestly, the West can go so many different ways. If you ask me in 2 hours, I might have a whole different answer.
No love for the Sixers and MVP Joel Embiid?
MVP.
Yeah, none.
None.
You don't. And I think he is the MVP, but I still don't trust him in the playoffs.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
When you look at the fact that it took basically a MVP-like performance to beat the Boston Celtics at home recently, when the Celtics didn't even have Jaylen Brown out there, it really said a lot to me. And I think that was a very interesting note for me on that end. And I think, you know, how comfortable, Justin, do you feel in trusting James Harden in the playoffs?
See, that's where I think this year, there's just something, every great player gets over that hump at one point in time in their career. And I think this is Joel Embiid's year. He's going to win MVP. It should have been his back-to-back MVP year this year. I think he gets over the hump, and I think they beat Boston in the playoffs.
But Will and Justin, I'm kind of looking at Doc Rivers over here. I need to see some adjustment from the playoff king who never seems to make it over the hump. I think if you look at Philly, if you look at Clippers, mm-hmm. their demise might have been the guy who's been coaching that team.
Yeah, I mean, they all have playoff ghosts and all of that stuff, you know. Noor, you're 100% right. I mean, no coach has given up more 3-1 series leads than Doc Rivers.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive. Like, not in a good way, but impressive nonetheless. And then we know the story with James Harden. Joel Embiid always has some freak accident. It's not even like, you can't even say injured. It's just freak accidents. Last year, he catches an elbow in a game that he shouldn't have been playing in at all in Toronto because it was a blowout. And that hurts them when they go play Miami. I think when you look at just kind of the roster construction, the one thing Philly doesn't have is who are they going to play as the backup five? We saw it a few years ago when they lost to Toronto, when Toronto won the championship. Every time Embiid stepped off the court, the swing was massive. And the question is, are you going to depend on Paul Reed for 8 minutes in the playoffs? Like, those 8 minutes can really kill you. And I think that's going to be the important question for the Sixers to have to answer. And I don't know if they have that on their bench right now.
Well, thank you so much again, Mo Dakhil of Bleacher Report and The Athletic NBA for joining us today. We're going to have to bring you back in a couple of weeks to see how your predictions play out. And if anything, we're going to have to make you do some dares on screen if nothing really comes to him out. But thanks again so much, Mo. Stick around for Jovan Buha up next to talk everything LeBron and the LA Lakers. Welcome back to the Homestand Show, you guys. Joining us now is Jovan Buha of The Athletic, covering the Lakers, host of the Stargazing podcast. I just had Mo on earlier, Jovan, actually, and he's also from LA, as you know. So thank you for taking the time this early in the morning at your end of the world.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on.
Absolutely.
Well, before we do anything, I gotta preface this conversation by letting you know that the guy next to me right over here, Justin Pooney, is a huge LeBron fan.
Okay.
Annoying, actually, if anything,
I'm not
to
an
that
annoying
level.
LeBron fan.
So if he says anything, he's gonna have a couple questions for you. Just gonna let you know prior to, but I wanna talk to you about the game last night. It was the LA showdown. The Clippers and Lakers faced off against each other. It was their 12th straight game, and the Lakers' 12th straight loss to the Clippers. So what can the Lakers do to get over this hump? And is this a scheduling conflict that you saw happening last night?
Yeah, well, LeBron used that term, scheduling conflict. It was the Lakers' fifth game, the end of a five-game road trip. It was a back-to-back, so they had played in Salt Lake City against the Utah Jazz the night before. That game went to overtime. LeBron has been on a minutes limit in the 30 to 32 minute range, ended up playing 38 minutes in that game. AD played 42 minutes, which was the most he had played since December before his foot injury. So I think for both of those guys, there was a lot of doubt even entering the day of whether or not they were going to be available. The Lakers listed them as questionable in the morning. They both were game time decisions. They had to go through their pregame warmups to decide whether or not they were going to play. I asked LeBron after the game when he knew he was going to play, and he said 60 on the clock, which was about 6 o'clock for a 7 o'clock tip. So really there was a lot of uncertainty, you know, talking to different people around the team and, you know, around the situation. Like, I was hearing they're playing, they're not playing, one of them's playing, like you just didn't really know. So with all that, I think it was encouraging if you're the Lakers to, you know, see them push through. And, you know, AD's had his reputation with injuries and load management and different things. You know, LeBron has missed a lot of time as well. So I think those guys were honestly just tired of missing time of, you know, they look at last year, they missed the postseason. You know, the year before, they had a quick postseason where they lost in the first round because AD got, you know, injured. So for them, if they could taste the postseason and, you know, potentially avoid the play-in tournament, had they won last night, that would have helped them do so. You know, I think that they wanted to go for it. So I think for them, the Clippers came in 3 days of rest. They hadn't played since Saturday. Lakers have had 3 games since then. So it really, from that perspective, the Clippers certainly had an edge there. But for the Lakers, I mean, a lot of times it's hard to win a back-to-back. This was especially hard, again, coming off of the circumstances of a long road trip. But, you know, it is what it is. The Clippers, as you said, they've won 32 of the last 39 matchups between these two teams. They've completely dominated them. They get up for it. It's their NBA finals, kind of. You know, there's just something about the purple and gold that they're like a bull. They see those colors and they just make every shot. It feels like, you know, and I've been on both sides of it. I cover the Clippers and now covering the Lakers. So like I've been on the Clippers side of them winning that matchup. I've been on the Lakers side of the Clippers winning the matchup. And it's really just been domination for almost a decade now.
Yeah. It's crazy. Cause you think about it, before that, the Lakers destroyed the Clippers on a night, on a basis of all the time. Right.
Yeah.
Russell Westbrook, you know, played 21 minutes last night, pretty efficient, 6 for 12. How much you think that win, not validated or, but just helped the psyche of Russell Westbrook, a guy that's been kind of, you know, beaten on a lot over the last couple of years?
I think it helped a lot. You know, it was, I wrote about it, like it was as icy as you would have expected. You know, there was no dapping up or, you know, handshakes pregame. You know, Russ is now starting with the Clippers, so he's part of those, you know, starter interactions. And I thought it was interesting that everyone is around half court, you know, right before tip off, saying hi to each other. And Russ is under the Lakers basket, actually, you know, kind of near their bench with his back to the bench and just staring into the crowd and just ignoring everybody. And, you know, didn't say hi to LeBron, didn't say hi to AD. Then during the game, LeBron's guarding him. LeBron is sagging off of him, doing exactly what teams have done to the Lakers, you know, the prior year and a half that Russ was with them, of just, you know, we're going to put Russ's defender in the paint and he can take as many jumpers as he wants. Well, Russ hit a couple of those jumpers to start the game, hit a couple threes, and then pointed out LeBron afterward. And, you know, you could tell that there was no love lost there between those two guys. Even at one point, LeBron threw a pass to Troy Brown Jr. that went out of bounds, ends up in Russ's hands on the Clippers bench. And then he gives it to the ref and then points at LeBron and says something. So, you know, what was interesting was Russ didn't play the last like quarter and a half. He ended up only playing 21 minutes, which was his fewest minutes as a Clipper and actually his fewest minutes total since January 2nd with the Lakers. And then he left without speaking to the media. So I don't know if that was him trying to duck the Laker media and not wanting to see us, because he's made it pretty clear he likes the Clippers media better. I don't know if he was upset with not playing, because that's been a trend with him of when his minutes are down, he's, you know, outwardly displeased with that. So it was for something that, you know, probably should have been more of a celebratory situation for him, it did feel like it ended on a little bit of a sour note, whether it was just him not wanting to talk to us or, upset with kind of the way the second half played out.
Well, Norm Powell kind of went off coming off the bench as well, so you kind of had to let him have some minutes as well. But
yeah, absolutely. Well, let's take away from that game. I'm sorry we have to rub that into you again, the 12th straight loss against the Clippers. But, you know, you were on the other end for the few good times too, so I feel like it kind of evens out for you. But I want to ask you about the state of the team going into the play-in now in the playoffs. I feel like the Lakers have been struggling this entire season. We haven't really had a clear-cut look to see whether or not they would push far or what this team would look like at this point of the season. But now they're in the play-in race. They've got LeBron James. They've made the trades to bring on D'Angelo Russell, Malik Beasley. What's the atmosphere in the city like right now, knowing that LeBron James is about to take over the playoffs?
Well, this is my third year on the Lakers beat, and I feel like this is the most optimistic that the fan base has been in those 3 years. I think, of course, going back to the 2021 playoffs, that team was a seven seed largely because LeBron and AD combined to miss over 60 games that season, and they were up 2-1 on the Suns. And then AD gets injured in game four. So maybe that's the most excited that the fan base has been. But I think, you know, just I think this fan base might appreciate, or, you know, the current state of the fan base is a appreciation with the way that last season went, the way that the first half of the season went. I saw someone from the Clippers last night, and they were like, it's just night and day how much better the Lakers are. And it's like, it's not even it's just like a completely new team. And obviously there's some carryover with LeBron, AD, Austin Reeves, Dennis Schroeder, but like it's a brand new starting lineup, brand new rotation. Some of those guys like Austin Reeves has had a breakout season, has played much better in the second half. So like even the guys that have kind of carried over, like haven't necessarily played the same roles or the same style since the beginning of the season. So I think the morale is high, even with the loss last night. I think, again, a lot of people expected it, but LeBron said it last night, where for them it's all about health. Health has been their biggest issue over the last few years. The one time LeBron and AD had a pretty healthy season together, they won a championship, and of course that was COVID and the bubble, and there's a lot more to that. But the last three seasons, including this one, they just have not been healthy. Those guys have both missed 20 plus games every season, and it's affected seeding. It's affected their ability to establish chemistry and continuity. And I think you've really seen them suffer. So I think now you're looking at it, they're probably not going to get the five seed. It's still technically possible, but the Clippers have that edge over them. They have the head-to-head tiebreaker. They're also now a game ahead of them. So most likely Lakers are looking at like a 6-8 seed right now. There's a big difference there, where 6, you avoid the play-in. 7, home game play-in. 8, got to go on the road for the play-in. So I think that they're trying to get that 6 or 7 right now. But LeBron made it clear, like, we don't care who we play. We're confident in the way we're playing. They've won 7 of their last 9. LeBron and AD, this is the best they've looked together again since probably 2021, if not 2020. And I think if those guys can stay healthy over these next couple games and enter the postseason with some momentum, like, I do think they can make a deep run. I think they could win, at least win one round, but potentially, depending on how the playoff bracket breaks out, maybe win a couple rounds. I think it's tough to go farther than that without home court advantage. And you just don't see a team make the finals winning 3 straight series on the road, or win a championship winning 4 straight series on the road. It's just, I think it's too hard to do. But they could definitely make some noise, and if they get Sacramento in the first round in that 3-6 matchup, or even Memphis in a 2-7, like, I think they could beat those teams. So I think that's really what they're angling for, is that 6 or 7 seed.
So you mentioned it. It's a new team, basically. Ever since that Westbrook trade, it's been a new rotation, new starting lineup. We know LeBron is LeBron, 29 points a game. We know AD stepped up big when LeBron was hurt. But out of those new pieces that the Lakers acquired at the deadline, who do you has made the most significant impact?
I think it's Jared Vanderbilt, actually, which this is like the third time he's kind of just been the throw in a deal, and it kind of ends up being one of the key, if not the key guys in the deal. You know, he's bounced around Denver, Minnesota, Utah, now the Lakers. And I think he's just exactly what they needed, because the Lakers have had two major weaknesses over the last two seasons, aside from their health, three-point shooting and size on the perimeter. They've had, they played so many three-guard lineups so many times. Someone 6'4", 6'5", is having to defend a 6'7", 6'8" guy. I mean, like, I think look at their matchups with the Raptors. Like, it looks like a JV team versus a varsity team if you're just looking at the players and how they match up against each other from a physicality standpoint, you know, length, athleticism. Like, the Lakers haven't been able to match up with those, you know, wing heavy teams like the Raptors, the Celtics, the Clippers, etc. So I think for them, Jared Vanderbilt is that guy who 6'9", you know, long arms, really athletic, is, you know, one of the better perimeter defenders in the league. We've seen him defend Luka Doncic at a high level, Devin Booker, also a guy like Karl Anthony Towns. Like, so he has some defensive versatility where he can take that pressure off of LeBron and AD, where they don't have to guard the best guys. They can kind of focus on, you know, AD can protect the paint. LeBron likes that free safety role where he can kind of roam around defensively. And Jared Vanderbilt can be the one. I mean, last night you saw he was the main guy guarding Kawhi. Actually did a pretty good job on him. It was more the Lakers' help defense and kind of the other areas where they were struggling. But I would say Jared Vanderbilt. Malik Beasley's had some moments as a shooter, although he's kind of up and down. D'Angelo, when he's been in the lineup, he's already gone through three different injuries. But when he's been available, he's been pretty solid. Mo Bamba. Rui Hachimura, who technically wasn't a deadline deal, they acquired him a couple weeks before. He's had some big games off the bench. So I think every guy has come in and made a contribution. And again, you know, to kind of paraphrase what that person from the Clippers was telling me, like, it's just night and day how much better this team is. And I think the Lakers front office really deserves some credit for going out and addressing their needs.
Even, sorry, from the Eastern Conference, like what we saw in a couple months ago to what this team looks like now, I'm kind of scared for the Western Conference, knowing that LeBron James has been given the opportunity to be in the playoff or even the play-in run. But thank you so much, Jovan, for joining us today. We have to talk about the Lakers, have to mention LeBron. So who other than the number one guy in LA to come on and give us a whole rundown of what this team looks like? We're going to have to bring you on again. I'm sure the Lakers will be making some noise this playoff. So please get ready to wake up again in the morning for the Eastern Conference. Too. Yeah, absolutely.
Whatever you guys need me.
You're the best. Stick around later. We'll talk about our favorite NBA performer, and we'll see you afterwards. Welcome back to the Homestand Show. I want to thank our guests today, Savannah Hamilton, Moda Keel, and Jovan Boha, for joining us to talk about everything and being the Toronto Raptors. But in this last block, I want to talk about the playoffs that are just coming around the corner. We brought on Albert Vartanian to talk
us
through.
By the way.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Thank you. From the OG himself, you guys.
No, I can't believe it.
I can't believe it. But so we got 3 minutes to hammer this out. Mm-hmm. Playoffs around the corner. That's where superstars are made, players are made, the favorites are made. Who currently right now, as this has set out to be, are you most excited to see in this playoff run make his performance? Albert,
I feel like anything outside of LeBron James is the wrong answer, but I'm going to go against him. I'm going to go Kawhi Leonard.
Dude.
Listen, he's playing back-to-back games again. We haven't seen that since, what, 2021? He looks really good. The Clippers look fantastic, as we saw against the Lakers. Two-time finals MVP. If this guy's clicking and peaking at the right time, he can alone himself carry the Clippers into potentially an NBA final.
Carry the Clippers to the NBA finals.
Why not? As he did last night against LeBron James.
The only concern is they're probably going to play the Suns, but if I want anybody, exactly. If I think anybody can lock up KD, it's the Claw.
What about Devin Booker?
Yeah, don't worry about Devin Booker. Okay, Westbrook's there. Terrence Mann, Norm Powell.
I cannot wait to see LeBron James back in the playoffs, back in meaningful basketball. The King is going to be back in the playoffs. That's number one. And number
two, King has returned.
Yes. And number two is obviously Steph Curry. I cannot wait to see Steph Curry in the playoffs. I think the Golden State Warriors, now they're going to get Andrew Wiggins back for the playoffs. Oh boy, watch like out. Watch out. North? Watch out.
You know, I could go with a lot of players right now, a lot of options. I can say Giannis. I can say Embiid. I can even say LeBron and make Justin happy right now. But Albert, you actually stole my answer. It's Kawhi Leonard. I can't wait. So he's bad. Ready again for the playoffs. Do you guys know what that means? I know you know what it means for LeBron to have that extra lever going into his performance, but Kawhi Leonard, once the playoffs come around, once he's locked in, both ends of the court, Justin Pooney, both ends of the court, he's taking over and he's making sure that his handprint is all over. Sorry, not handprint. His claw print is all over the game.
Claw print.
That's what matters. KD That's what too, I'm waiting though. For. No, KD's going to be. Hey. I wonder how he looks
KD
like.
KD looks good. Over.
Hey, I said this again with Mo and when we had Mo on. Embiid's taking the Sixers to the Eastern Conference Finals, but they lose to Giannis.
I can
see that.
Book
I can totally.
They're beating
that.
The Celtics.
Either way, that Sixers Bucks is seven.
Yeah,
seven
well,
games.
Sixers gotta be the healthy Celtics team first, so we'll talk about that afterwards.
Very true.
I'm Noor Zeinab, Albert Vartanian. Hey, my bad, Justin Pooney. Thank you for watching us today. This has been an NBA special of Homestand, and we'll catch you guys again tomorrow with the normal rundown. Thanks again, and take care.